the same as I was.
Why you come no more to Canieri?
Asuk said. He did not know how to say that he missed her. That each afternoon before her arrival, he used to arrange the cushions on the daybed just so, and tidy his belongings, and make sure his clothes were neat and his pigtail tied. That, as he watched her sleep, he had often been near choked with joy. That he had sometimes reached out his hand and let it hover within an inch of her breast, as though he could feel the softness of her skin in that smoky space between his flesh and hers. That sometimes after she took her pipe, he would wait some time before taking his own, so that he could watch her and fix her image in his mind to remember.
"I can't come to see you any more," Anna said. "You mustn't be here. I can't come."
Asuk studied her sadly.
"No more smoke?"
"No more," Anna said. "No more smoke, and no more Canieri."
"Why?"
"I can't explain it, not here. I've stopped, Asuk. I've stopped it altogether."
"No more money?"
said Asuk, trying to understand. He knew that Anna had laboured under an enormous debt. She owed a great deal of money to Dick Mannering, and the debt mounted every day. Perhaps she could no longer afford the drug. Or perhaps she could no longer afford the time to make the journey to take it.
"It's not money," Anna said.
Just then a female voice called out Anna's name from deep in the well of the house, and asked, in a tone of impatient condescension, to know the name and business of the caller at the door. Anna turned her chin to the side, but did not move her eyes from Arsuk's face.
"It's just a chink I used to know," she called. "It's nothing." "Well, what does he want?"
"Nothing,"
Anna called again.
"He's only trying to sell me something."
There was a silence.
"I bring to you, here?" said Arsuk.
He cupped his hands together and proffered them to her, indicating that he was willing to deliver the resin himself.
"No,"
Anna whispered.
"No, you can't do that. It's no use. The thing is, I can't feel it anymore."
Asuk did not understand this.
"Last piece," he said,
meaning the ounce he had gifted her on the afternoon of her near death.
"Last piece. Unlucky?"
"No,"
Anna began, but before she could speak further, there were quick steps in the passage, and in the next moment a second woman had appeared at Anna's side.
"Good afternoon," she said. "What is it that you are selling?"
"That will do, Anna." And at once Anna melted back from the doorway. Asuk had also taken a step backwards, but in shock rather than submission, for this was the first he had seen of Lydia Greenway in nearly 13 years. The last time that he had laid eyes upon her was when? At the Sydney courthouse. She in the gallery, he in the dock. She, red-faced, fanning herself with an embroidered sandalwood fan, the scent of which had floated down to reach him, recalling, in a rush of emotion, his family's warehouse on the Guangzhou waterfront, and the sandalwood boxes in which the merchants packed their bolts of silk before the wars. She'd been wearing a gown of pale green, this he remembered well, and a bonnet covered in lace. She had kept her face perfectly grave throughout the trial. Her testimony, when she gave it, had been short and to the point. Asuk had not understood a word of it, save for when she pointed directly at him, evidently to identify him to the court. When Asuk was acquitted of the murder, she had betrayed no emotion of any kind. She had only risen, mutely, and left the courtroom without a backward glance. Over 12 years had passed since that day, over 12 years, and yet here she was, monstrously present, monstrously unchanged. Her copper hair was as bright as ever, her skin was fresh and hardly lined. She was as plump and buxom as Anna was gaunt. In the next moment, her features also slackened, which was unusual, for Lydia's expressions were typically very artfully manicured, and she did not like to show surprise, and her eyes became wide.
"I know this man," she said in a tone of astonishment.
She brought her hand up to her throat.
"I know him."
Anna looked from Asuk to Mrs. Wells and then back again.
"How?"
she said.
"Not from Canieri."
Ah-Suk had acquired a film of perspiration on his upper lip. He said nothing, however, and merely bowed. Perhaps they would think that he could not understand them. He turned back to Anna, feeling that if he kept eye contact with Lydia Greenway for even a moment longer, she would recall where they had met before. He could still feel her in the periphery of his eye, watching him. Anna was frowning, too.
"Perhaps you're thinking of a different man," she said to Mrs. Wells. "It's often hard to tell Chinamen apart."
"Yes, perhaps," said Mrs. Wells, but she was still staring at Ah-Suk. Whether she had placed him already or not, he could not tell. He cast about for something to say to Anna, but his mind was blank.
"What do you want, Ah-Suk?" said Anna.
She did not speak unkindly, but with longing. There was a pleading, almost fearful look in her eye.
"What did you call him?"
said the older woman, quickly.
"Ah-Suk," Anna said. "Mr. Suk, I suppose. He's the dealer at Canyere."
"Ah!" Her gaze sharpened immediately.
"Opium!"
So she had placed him. She had remembered who he was. At once, Ah-Suk changed his tack. He turned to Anna and announced,
"I buy you, top price."
The widow laughed.
"Oh,"
Anna said. She had flushed very red.
"No, you can't do that. I suppose nobody told you. I'm done with whoring now. I'm not a whore any longer. No selling, not for sale."
"What you now?" said Ah-Suk.
"Miss Wetherill is my assistant," said Mrs. Wells.
But Ah-Suk did not know the word.
"She lives here now." "I live here now," Anna echoed. "I don't take opium any more. Do you understand? No more smoke. I've given it up."
Ah-Suk was bewildered.
"Well, goodbye," Anna said. "Thank you for calling."
Suddenly, Mrs. Wells' wrist shot out. She grabbed Ah-Suk's forearm in her milky hand and squeezed it tight.
"You must come to the séance this evening," she said. "He doesn't have a ticket," Anna said. "An oriental presence," said Mrs. Wells, ignoring her. "It will be just the thing. What did you call him again?"
"Ah-Suk," said Anna.
"Oh, yes," said Mrs. Wells. "Just think of it. An oriental presence at this evening's séance."
"Is a séance an oriental practice?" Anna said doubtfully. Ah-Suk did not know the word, but he knew oriental.